let's get into some technology talk. And Wandi, 3D printing. You know about 3D printing, don't you?
I do a little bit. I've dabbled a little bit in 3D printing. One of my good friends actually uses 3D printing in his kind of in his business.
Yeah.
So yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. Okay. Have you ever seen and held and touched a 3D printed article?
I have. Yeah. It's but it was made out of plastic. And I think now what's really insane is that 3D printers aren't just using plastic to kind of print things, but they're using some real metals, which is really pushing the boundaries. And that's, I think that's the future of making or manufacturing things.
Well, talking about 3D printing using different materials. I saw a video of a 3D printed house. Okay.
Oh, so yeah.
Imagine that. Have you seen it? Imagine that for a second. There's this humongous printer. So what it does is it feeds cement through the printing nozzle, and goes about actually printing the walls of the house, layer for layer for layer, which I think is brilliant. You just have this big construction, what looks like a massive printer above the area, and then it goes about printing the walls of the house. I don't know about the roof so much. Maybe that's a different story, but definitely the whole structure of the house just came alive. Have you seen 3D printed objects, Lawrence?
I have indeed, and I have a friend who specializes in 3D printers. I have modeled things in CAD and had them 3D printed. I know quite a lot about 3D printing. And like I said, the different types of plastic. You get soft plastic, hard wearing plastic. You can print in titanium. You can print in brass. You can print in all sorts of, and it really all depends on the machine and the nozzle head and the clarity of what you want the print to come out at. So you can have a print take 5 minutes,
yeah,
or you can have a print take 6 hours. The longer it takes, the neater and cleaner it is. And I sort of know where this is going because there was an article about 3D printing race car parts.
Yeah, so that's exactly where I was getting to, and that is the Belgian racing team Heli had an engine problem. And under race conditions, the manifold of this four-cylinder turbo diesel, its BMW 1 Series, exploded, bursting along an ultrasonically welded seam. Now, if you imagine parts in cars are welded together, bolted together, and they've got seals and seams, and any time you try and bolt something together or weld it together, that is the weakest link in the chain. Any welding is weaker than the stuff around it. It creates weakness on the edge of the weld. The welding itself is not necessarily weak, but that join becomes a weak point. And this exploded under race conditions. Ultrasonically welded seam held together the manifold's two halves. The team then tried reinforcing the seam, but when the car returned to the track during the middle of the race, there was a familiar bang and loss of power and a pit stop for the replacement of the manifold. And they couldn't get this right. And so what they did was they substituted this manifold and got it 3D printed. Wandi, I mean, what do you think about car parts now being 3D printed? A manifold. I mean, that's huge amounts of heat in that part of the car.
Yeah. Well, if you take motorsport for instance, it's the highest strain that you're going to put on essentially the entire vehicle, right? And to make these substitute parts takes weeks because there's molds that need to happen. There's lots of testing that needs to happen. But with 3D printing, this team managed to get down the replacement of this down to 10 hours.
Wow.
For a racing team to get weeks taken out in 10 hours. And what's more impressive is that the new fabricated part was stronger and lighter in less than half the time. I mean, literally exponentially less the time. So I honestly think for smaller teams and all teams as a whole, this is a huge cost-cutting opportunity. And if we don't start seeing this in the next months, surely in the next few years, large parts of vehicles are going to be 3D printed.
Well, I can't wait because, you know, the more we get done on an automated basis, the better, right? I mean, Lawrence, electric cars are the thing of the future. Why not just print the entire car?
Well, that is the idea. Eventually, most modern engines that get made now, the rapid prototyping is done in 3D printing.
Yeah.
Why go and make a mold, cast something in steel, and then find out that it's flawed or wrong when you can have a rapidly prototyped 3D printed version of something? I mean, I've seen entire engines 3D printed to see how things are going to interact with each other in real space. When it comes to the future of automobiles, where we start talking about electric cars that are made out of exotic materials, higher, you know, thermoplastics and things like that, yeah. Why, you know, lay out a sheet of plastic and then form it into a door panel or whatever? You just 3D print the thing. And as the technology with 3D printers gets better and the speed gets better,
yeah,
and the ability to make parts faster and better than and not taking 10 hours to print an inlet manifold, you know, it's the future of where automotive technology is going.
I totally agree.
Absolutely. It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing that we're at a point where you can just print out, like, an engine.
This is one of those things that I'm really excited about, but I never talk about because the minute I start talking about X, Y, Z axis machines and, you know, MDA plastics going through this size nozzle, people switch off. They're not interested in what I have to say. It's one of those subjects I'm really excited about.
Well, maybe because of the deep technicality. So, you know, moving on to our next bit of tech talk. And this crowd worries me because have they actually put a car on the road? And I don't think so. And that's Lucid Motors. Lucid Motors hasn't put a car on the road, but now they're claiming that their car has an estimated driving range. It's an electric car, in case you didn't know. Of 832 kilometers as verified in independent testing. You know, are these guys for real?
How did they get to that number if they haven't built a car? Have they built a
prototype? No, they built prototypes, but they haven't put a full-on production car out on the road like Tesla has. So you know,
difference between having a prototype and actually having a production-ready car.
Exactly.
Prototypes can do amazing things. Production-ready, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I think we'll have to wait for the car to come out, especially with the electric vehicles, because what they claim is essentially their biggest sort of value proposition or selling point. And what you get when you purchase it is not necessarily what you always were told. So I think we're going to have to wait a while to see how this vehicle performs, but I honestly thoroughly hope that they have cracked this, above 500 mile, 800 kilometer sort of range, because that would be a game changer.
Well, let's see. I mean, I've been hearing about Lucid Air now for probably 3 years. The Lucid Air was actually unveiled in December 2016. And I don't know if there's a Lucid Air on the road.
I mean, this, to be honest with you, George, it's the first time I'm hearing the name. I mean, even I know about Rivian, who have yet to make something. But, yeah, I've never heard of Lucid, so.
Smoke and mirrors. You think it's just smoke and mirrors?
Right? I don't know. I mean, I hope it's real because, you know, we need some serious, first-to-market electric-only brands in the world. So I'm hoping Lucid makes it big. But, let's not
push this technology forward.
Yes, let's not be lucid about it. Get the car on the road, right? hopefully we see Lucid Air driving on the roads of the world at some point, and hopefully on the roads of South Africa. Bring the Tesla here first, though, and then Wandy, tell us about this new battery technology, or I suppose not battery technology, it's just a design technology in China, where they aim to make EVs drive further by doing something with the chassis.
So there's a Tesla supplier in China called CATL, and essentially they want to start integrating battery cells within electric car chassis. So what this does is that it sheds a lot of casings that, you know, are required in current systems, which essentially make the system a bit bulky and not as efficient. So by doing this, they claim that they can get EVs to drive over 800 kilometers, which, like Lucid Air, is a, you know, it's kind of the milestone number that everyone's chasing right now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't have a date of when this is going to launch, but they think it's going to be before 2030. So that just goes back to the Lucid Air chat of just how impactful it would be if they actually got it in literally a year from now. Whereas this Chinese company that does this for, you know, this is what they do, for Tesla, saying that, you know, it's going to take a little while to get there. So we'll kind of have to just wait and see who's going to be the first, sort of OEM or battery manufacturer to get batteries to this 500 mile, 800 kilometer sort of range.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, battery technology is rapidly, rapidly evolving, and, I've got no doubt, but, this is not really battery technology, is it? It's more a case of just putting more batteries in the car by replacing other things like the chassis, not replacing the chassis, but making the chassis, a battery effectively.
Battery. Correct. Yeah. I mean, there's still details to come out of this, but essentially, like you said, it's just finding efficient ways to get the best out of the entire space of the vehicle. And yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens. You know, they're not the only people who are thinking this way. There's a few players in the game. Mm. But yeah, it's just great to see that across the board, everyone's trying to be innovative and finally get this, you know, the EV generation or revolution, you know, moving.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a revolution, and one day it'll become an evolution. But at the moment, it's still an evolution. And then the American Automobile Association. Did I get that right? Has done some testing and finds driver assistance tech is far from reliable. So two tests done by the AAA in the United States during the past 2 years show that partially automated driving systems don't always function properly. And they're recommending that car companies limit their use. You know, what kind of systems are these guys talking about?
Okay, so from what I can see, they're talking about things like lane keeping assist, city safe, automatic braking, you know, the driver assistance programs.
So not full self-driving?
No, because I think there's only two or three companies that are specializing in that, and I think everybody's already seen that that technology in the hands of the layman, not such a good idea. I'm actually going to call BS on what these guys are saying, because I've driven almost all of the driver assistance packages that they're talking about in this article. Mm. And 99% of the time, the systems work. I mean, I even put the Subaru EyeSight to the test.
Yeah.
I drove at a wall at 60 k's an hour, and the car automatically braked. It did that. The video is up on site. You can go have a look.
I didn't know that, Lawrence.
Yeah, no, I did the test. It was quite.
Oh, so you didn't increase the shutter speed.
Drove at a wall at 60 k's an hour, and the car did what it was supposed to. Unfortunately, I'm still one of those old school motorists that I don't fully trust the system. I know it's going to work, but I'm that guy that's going to hover with.
So how did it feel heading towards the wall at 60 k's an hour?
I closed my eyes and hoped that the system would work, and it did. It recognized the wall, and it automatically braked the car.
Wow.
That's incredible.
It was
an experiment.
Well, for everybody's benefit, Lawrence is a motoring journalist, which means that for a living, what Lawrence does, besides be on Auto Central, what Lawrence does is he drives cars for a living. And then he tells you all about them. So Lawrence got a lot of experience in driving different cars. So I take his opinion seriously, as opposed to, you know, looking at this AAA bit of study, for lack of a better term. But you know, taking the risk of driving a car towards a wall at 60 k's an hour and expecting the system to work, that must have been scary. That must have been.
I had assurance from the manufacturer that it would work.
Ah.
That it worked.
And it did. So, because you're still sitting here.
Exactly. I have to admit, though, there was no danger. The wall was made out of plastic barriers. So had things gone pear-shaped, I just would have ended up with a scratched bumper. But the fact is that it recognized it and it worked.
Yeah, fair enough.
I was like,
you should have left it at a brick wall. I was like...
I'm brave, but I'm not stupid, George. what I'm saying basically what AAA is, I think they've got the wrong end of the stick.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be admonishing the OEMs for including these systems in the cars, but rather be saying, educate the people that are buying the cars and that are going to use the systems and say, this is not a replacement for your operational, you know, input on the vehicle. I mean, I've done the experiment. I've driven from Johannesburg to Pretoria without touching a single control in a car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Highly, highly inadvisable, but like I said, I'm that guy that's sitting with my hands hovering just over the steering wheel and over the brake pedal because I just don't 100% trust the system. And I think that is maybe what they're complaining about, is saying the automotive manufacturers can include these things, but they should be telling people this is not a replacement for you. You can't just climb into a Tesla and expect the thing to take you to the nearest coffee shop while you read the newspaper because you're going to crash into something.
It's not supposed to be like a substitute for you driving. It's literally an aid or a safety precaution, if you may.
Exactly. I 100% agree with OEMs including these things in cars, but it's not a replacement for, driver training. You should still be 100% in control of the car and be able to drive the car if the system fails.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are not replacements for humans yet. So I agree with Lawrence. I think the AAA test is a little bit unfair and taking things a little bit too far. I mean, let's be honest. For over 100 years, these car manufacturers have been physical technology manufacturers, and not technology in the sense of the word for software. They're not software engineers. So the world's still trying to figure this out. You know, give them a chance to do that. And that's why we don't have fully autonomous vehicles that are allowed to drive on everybody's roads at the moment. It's because we're figuring this out, which means that you can't drive towards a wall, a brick one, at 60 k's an hour and cry foul when the thing doesn't stop. It doesn't mean that that the technology doesn't work, but maybe the driver, as Lawrence said, doesn't know how to use the product. I mean, if there's no lines on a road, how do you expect the car to know where the hell it is, right?
And that's that 1% I was talking about. 99% of the time, the system is going to work and it's going to work as indicated. Mm. But it is only capable – it's a machine. It only works on the input it receives.
Yeah.
So if the sensor on the windscreen is blocked, it's not going to get any input from there, so the system won't work. If there's a giant wasp that flew into the radar detector on the front of the car, system's not going to work. So it's only as good as the input it receives.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm saying the systems are great to have, and they are, I say, make more. But the OEMs need to sit back and say, you know what, guys, these systems are great. They're here for your protection, but remember, they're only as good as the input they receive. So please don't let go of the steering wheel and expect the car to drive itself for 50 kilometers.
I don't know, for flipping sure.